Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined by none other than Kellen Jones, who played Mr. Steve Green. Kellen, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Thanks very much. Great to be here. Thanks for having us. Thanks for your patience. I know we've been trying to make this happen for a while.
So. We have, yeah. We certainly have. You know what we'll do then, Kellen, is we'll start the way we start every episode. And if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
Well, I first got into acting through school.
Right.
It was the thing that kind of made most sense to me. And it was the first thing that I felt like, you know, like there were the kids who were like, you know, you the fastest runner, and you were like, you know, I was fast, but not the fastest. Do you know what I mean? I was, I was smart, but not the smartest. I was, I couldn't play football. Do you know what I mean? But I tried all these certain things. And then you were always like, what's going to be my thing? You know?
Yeah.
And then it ended up acting. So sort of, it suited me. It fitted and everything kind of made sense from there, really. And I went to, and that was at school, and then I went to art college where I did performing arts, and then I went to the Manchester Youth Theatre, a pivotal point in my sort of, evolution as an actor. And then I went to drama school at 18.
Right.
And I've been a professional actor since. And from that kind of one tree trunk.
Yeah.
There's been a load of branches that have sort of sprouted out, you know,
yeah.
And Grange Hill being one of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we will get on to Grange Hill, but obviously when you were back at like the Manchester Youth Theatre and stuff like that, did you get to work with anyone that we might know of or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the people that kind of, you know, there were some great actors that came from there, but also Manchester Youth Theatre had a great sort of lineage, really, because right. There were people, you know, Mike Lee started there, David Threlfall started there, David right. Schofield started there, Alan Williams, you know, sort of Struan Roger, and then, so in my time, there were people who you'd know, like Lindsay Marshall, who went on to play Cleopatra in Rome, and phenomenal actress. She was there when we were there together. Yeah. You know, and then a bunch of other faces. But interestingly, sort of when you go into the business, I've worked with some of the old school since then, like David Schofield in our movie 6 Minutes to Midnight, and David Threlfall. I did the last ever episode of Shameless, and I met him there. And I met Mike Lee a couple of times, and Alan Williams was somebody who done amazing stuff like in Utopia and things like that, and the original Warhorse. So we all connect by going, what year were you in Manchester Youth Theatre?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So even though like we weren't there the same time.
Yeah.
You know, we all have the same story of Jeff and Hazel Sykes, who started up that youth theatre. And it was huge for me because I made some of my closest friends who are still really close friends with me.
Yeah.
I met my wife there.
Right.
So, so the boy did well, really.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. Went from Anglesey and I came back with a career and a wife, you know what
right.
I mean? And it was sort of super important, really. But the interesting thing is that you do meet people and you connect on a level whatever age you are.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. And I was just looking at, you know, I've looked through your CV. And stuff, and I noticed that your first sort of listing on IMDb, and I say this at every single episode, I know IMDb is not the most reliable, and obviously the people that listen to this must get bored of me saying that, but I noticed you were in something called Shackleton, is that right?
Yeah.
With Kenneth Branagh.
Well, that was my first job. I mean, this is proof that IMDb, and I know Cole Needham, who created IMDb.
Right, okay. You
know? So I was with him the other week, and that's a phenomenal story. The guy, you know, he had ring binders in his shed of all actors in all the films that he'd collected over the years.
Wow.
then it became a website called IMDb. Then he sold it to Amazon. It's a phenomenal story. I think it should be a TV show. It's a hell of a story. Sort of a this guy in the Midlands just sort of, you know, changing the face, you know, because it's so ubiquitous film industry now. But no, I think on IMDb my first credit is something like The Bench, but that isn't my first credit. My first credit was Shackleton, which was two-hour movies shot on 35 mil in the Arctic Circle for Channel 4 America.
Wow.
And I had a great part in it, and we went and lived on a Norwegian icebreaker in the middle of the Arctic Circle, 66 degrees north. And it sort of changed my life. One minute I was pulling pints in a pub in Regent Street in London between theatre jobs, and next minute I was flying out to Reykjavik and sailing out to Greenland and making this movie that changed my life, really.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely changed my life. And again, met some people that I'm still connected with to this day. It was sort of spoiling and, you know, because it spoiled you because no other job was like that for a long time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was brilliant because it happened so young to me that it gave me hope for the rest of the career.
Yeah.
And I, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't waiting for a break. It was more the case of, it can happen.
Yeah.
It can happen. So, yeah, that was Shackleton. I played a guy called Pierce Blackborough.
Yeah. I mean, that must have just been an amazing experience, as you said there. Like, and, you know, if that's your first job, really, and you're working with Kenneth Branagh, and, you know, you've been to drama school and you've been to, you know, Manchester Youth Theatre and all that, but you must obviously still learn from someone like Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. But you learn from everyone, really. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you know, with sort of Ken Branagh, like, I mean, it was quite a funny thing for me because I was desperate to work with Kenneth Branagh.
Right, you know? Okay.
At drama school, I had all his videos, VHSs of all his Shakespeare, all these things. And I was like, wow, one day I'll meet Ken Branagh and he'll think I'm great and I'll be in his Shakespeare films, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And sort of what you learn, you know, when I met him, he's, first of all, you realize everyone's human.
Yeah.
Everyone's vulnerable and everyone's strong. But he had an amazing sense of leadership and an amazing sense of what he was and what he needed to be, you know, even though he's playing Shackleton as a leader, he's comfortable leading a troop.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the thing with Ken. And he was a very, very kind guy. You know, I mean, you know, I was 21, 22, you know, I turned 22 on that job. But he was very, very kind, and sort of patient and, you know, generous as well, you know, but they all were, they all were because there was such brilliant actors there, you know, and you just learn very quickly. My dad was in the Merchant Navy, so it was the closest I got to going to the Merchant Navy, really, sort of going on a ship and having to get on with everybody and find a way and that sort of thing. But no, I mean, I've had the pleasure of working with some of the most amazing actors on the planet, you know. Judi Dench, Michael Gambon, you know, Alicia Vikander, Kelly Riley, Elijah Wood, you know, Kieran Hines.
Yeah.
Shirley Henderson. I mean, on and on and on, just amazing. Timothy Spall, just amazing actors. And yeah, you do pick up stuff and on the way, and sometimes you're in awe, and all you're thinking inside is, please think I'm good. Please don't think I'm
good. I get you. Yeah.
You know?
So you do get starstruck, do you?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, not so much anymore, but I think definitely, I mean, when I worked with Ken Branagh, I don't think I could string. I actually asked him once, I couldn't string a sentence together. I sort of said, have you ever get starstruck?
Yeah, all right.
And so I was asking him, because we lived on a ship together and we'd sit out on the deck after work and have a drink. And you know, I was 21, 22. I just wanted to impress him. I wanted to sort of chat and, you know,
Yeah.
but I couldn't formulate my sentences properly. And I said, you know, were you in awe of? And he went, well, he said, apparently I directed John Gielgud twice, but I don't remember doing that. And
Wow.
I directed Robert De Niro, but I found it very difficult. You know, I was in awe of everything, and he did
Yeah.
that. And I said, well, now you know how I feel, Ken, with you, you know. And he laughed, and it was nice. But
Yeah.
no, you know, I mean, you know, you know, we're all the same, and you're always aware. I am now. Now I'm a longer in the tooth and further down the road. I've always been aware of, you know, people coming in for the first time, and making sure people are comfortable and, you know, relaxed and welcome. You know, it's really, really important
Definitely.
to not, you know, lose yourself there and remember that sort of nervous 21, 22 year old who just wanted to impress, you know. So, but yeah, you do learn, and then all the time you learn off people, and then you learn off people who aren't super famous, you know what I mean, who are just amazing at their job, you know, like,
It's brilliant.
and you go, wow, how'd you do that, you know? And it's that old story. I think Anthony Hopkins asked Laurence Olivier, how do you become a great screen actor? And Olivier said, you just have to learn to relax in front of the camera. And Hopkins said, well, how long does that take? He said, about 20 years. So
Brilliant.
maybe, maybe.
Yeah. Oh no, brilliant. So okay, so we'll fast forward a couple of years there then. So series 27 of Grange Hill. We
Which is
meet.
just closely regarded as the best ever series of
Obviously, yeah, definitely, definitely. Obviously, we met Mr. Green, the new English teacher. Obviously, you must have been aware of Grange Hill.
Oh yeah.
Had you watched it when you were a kid?
I mean, you know, Grange Hill is one of the great British brands. It's HP sauce to me. It really is. It's a stick of Blackpool Rock, you know what I mean? It is the FA Cup. Grange Hill really, really is one of those brands that you can't have grown up, you know, during its sort of it was hugely important to us all, you know. I was born in 79, so my Grange Hill years would have been Zamo and Ziggy and Gonge, and you know, that's where I was. You know, I was not the Susan Tully Tucker era, even though I kind of my sister had those annuals, so I
Right,
could open them, but they were my, you know what I mean. And I thought Ziggy was great, you know. I loved that character, and I loved Gonge, and I loved. And obviously the, you know, that the famous Just Say No storyline. And also it belongs in that time where that transition from primary school to big school, you know, to secondary school. Like when my elder sister went, well, they're both older than me, but the first one went to secondary school. I remember she came home and I said, what was it like? And she said, it's just like Grange Hill. Yeah. And so that was always there. So yeah, of course, Grange Hill I was absolutely aware of. And then so when I got this opportunity, when it came back and it went to Liverpool, and my agent at the time suggested it, I was super excited because I'd done Shackleton and I'd done another period drama for the BBC. And they were kind of sort of posh telly, and then there were a few other things swimming around, but you know, I was really kind of into going to do something not a long time, but I knew that it would be one season. I knew that I knew what was going to happen to the character, you know. So I knew what I was signing up for.
Right, I
That
get you.
you know that it was spoiler alert, but you know, Mr. Steve Green doesn't survive. Doesn't hang on to his, And so I was, and also I wanted kind of those, I wanted to be in something popular. I wanted to be in some, and I wanted to get that experience of that camera work of just being in front of the camera, because I'd sort of go and do a play, or I'd go and do a film, and it was concentrated and there was great apart. So it was really appealing. And by then I was what, 24, 23, maybe 23, 24, needed the job as well. I needed the work, and I lived in London, and and stuff like that. So I was really excited to sort of go up and do it and be part of it, really. And I didn't know he was called Steve Green till episode 9. I
Right,
didn't know.
okay. Yeah, I mean, that was a that's a question I asked you the other night. I was actually, I was researching the character, and nothing refers to the, to his first name anywhere. So I was obviously watching an episode, and he introduced himself as Steve Green. So that was it. That was where that came from. So it's fair to say, Mr. Green, he had a little bit of a problem with discipline. That the kids found it easy to, run rings around him. And the very first scene he's in, he's made name cards for all the kids, and he just assumes that they're all just going to take their own name card and put it in front of him. And obviously, he took them and mixed them all up, and hilarity ensues, shall we say, they were getting all their name mixed up. And it was only Mr. Malachi comes in and obviously knows the kids, so gets them all to swap them back. And Mr. Green's he's a bit taken aback by the fact that the kids would have, could have done that to him.
I love that scene, and I loved Ed Baker Duley. He was such a great actor and such a lovely fella. And but also it's very real, that bit.
Yeah,
You're all
definitely.
at school. The new teacher comes in, and you just think, what can I get away with? And if the new teacher comes in and he walks a bit different, and he talks a bit different, and he takes himself a bit too seriously. And also, new teachers are really young. They're not much older than the kids they're teaching. So it was sort of a great, you just got it. There was so much kind of humor in that, and I like, I like, I had great fun with that character, and it was great fun to play a character who was so sort of earnest and enthusiastic, but yet sort of, fragile underneath and kind of thing, and you just knew he was gonna
I mean
pop.
that really comes across. I thought when I was watching it, I thought he just wants to teach these kids. He's so enthusiastic about it, and it really does come across. But what I like in that scene is when they are getting a bit unruly, he shouts, but he's obviously not used to shouting and, trying to keep order and stuff, because the line he comes up with when the bell rings is, "That bell is for you, not for me." He's mixed it. He's mixed. He's got that classic line wrong, and I just love all that. And you think he's going to be a bit of a comedy character, this fella. He's not. He's not going to be too serious. He is going. Because Granger Le Dad sort of teachers that couldn't really control the class before, and it did sort of go down that different route. Because the next time we see him, he's with the older kids, and one of them is Taylor Mitchell, played by Reese Noy, and he's brilliant in that role, isn't he? Like, he was so
Yes,
good. He was
brilliant.
so good as Taylor, because he seemed like Mr. Green seemed he had to be a bit harder with them, but as he turns away, Taylor threw something at the back of his head, and Mr. Green turned around, who threw that? And Taylor just goes, "It was me," and gets up and walks out, because that was the punishment. Mr. Green had said, "If you can't behave, you can spend the rest of the lesson." And Taylor goes, "It was me. I'll wait outside, because it'd be more interesting than being in here." And you sort of get straight away, is there going to be something else? How's Mr. Green, who is just a really nice fella and really wants to teach these kids, how's he going to cope with this lad, especially? And
You
that
feel like
sort
they're on a collision course, don't you?
of, you
I
can tell
mean,
from the start there's going to be something
yeah.
happening.
Because it was sort of like they put me with Togger in terms of the young kids for the japes and the sort of enthusiasm, and can Mr. Green reach out and get these kids, and in a way it's a great thing, because you've got the enthusiastic teacher who feels like he can make a great impact on these young lives. And then you meet the kids who are a bit older that he's just kind of missed out on making an impact, and he's not going to get to them. Yeah. And that's a different story. And that's a different.
Yeah, because obviously Taylor had had issues in the past. You know, we'd been virtually on the brink of getting expelled, and they'd allowed him to come back as well. So, as you say, it was going to be a collision course. And you've mentioned there about Togger with the jokes and stuff, because he calls Mr. Green Mr. Bean at one point, and then like. So Mr. Green has to like then obviously raise his voice and shout at him, but you can tell he was never sort of comfortable with having the disciplinary side, even though Mr. Malachy had said when the going gets tough, the tough have to get tougher. Also in that older class, because it's a classic thing where if someone feels like, and I'm just talking about in life in general, if they feel like they're being bullied, they look to someone to try and take it out on. And Mr. Green seemed to take this out on Karen Young, and he seemed to have it in for Karen Young. And I think it was because she was a kid that wouldn't always argue back, or, you know, wouldn't say stuff. And there'd be loads of people talking, but he'd only ever pull Karen on it, you know. And it is that classic sort of thing. I'm not saying he was getting bullied, which is the phrase I use, but where he found it hard to discipline others, he would take it out on Karen. And you look at that and you just...
No, I think he I think it was the whole storyline, the whole story arc is about bullying.
Yeah.
You know, the whole character trait is you know, and character journey is about, you know, exploring the levels of bullying and how you receive it and pass it on, and man hands misery on to man, you know, or kicking the cat kind of thing, or who do I? It's like a, you know, and that's what I think it is quite interesting, and why Grange Hill is so, you know, potent in our kind of sort of cultural psyche.
Yeah.
It's on our landscape. We get it. We see it. We've experienced it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you could see, as you said there was going to be a collision course, because Mr. Green gave Karen a detention for talking, and Taylor says, well, I was talking as well, why don't you give me a detention? So he goes, okay. So he had that sort of little bit, and he did give Taylor the detention, but it was just sort of building up and building up, and then we do go back to the, you know, the jovial scenes where Mr. Green, for some reason, and I couldn't quite work this out, Mr. Green had become involved with the projects for the history of the school, which just seemed like something a history teacher would have been involved with, not an English teacher.
Yeah.
And he'd sort of given it a responsibility to Togger and to Tanya to, you know, sort of be in charge with him. And Togger was working with Abel. And they said, well, we'll get Mr. Green to help, because he'll basically do it all for us.
He'll do all the work. Yeah.
And the thing I liked about this was they'd sort of tasked Togger and Abel with finding Grange Hill's oldest living pupil.
Yeah,
and Togger had come back and said, well, my Uncle Peter used to go to Grange Hill. And do you remember who Uncle Peter was?
Well, I remember the day filming, and he was a really experienced actor.
I think you might be getting confused here, because Togger's Uncle Peter wasn't in that episode. Togger's Uncle Peter was Tucker Jenkins.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So he was referring to that.
Yeah,
I was talking when we went to the old people's home.
So, because Mr. Green said, well,
it's
how
20,
old?
How many years ago now? 20?
Yeah, yeah.
22 years ago?
Mr. Green says to Togger, well, how old's Uncle Peter? And, oh, he's ancient. He's about 39. So Mr. Green said, well, I don't think that'll count for you. But they did actually find Grange Hill's oldest surviving.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
People, it was called Mr. Winston, Bill Winston. I can't remember the actor's name. I haven't written that down. I normally do, but I haven't. And he was someone who lived in sheltered accommodation, and Mr. Green took them. And that's when we find out Mr. Green's first name, because he introduced himself as Steve Green. But they do.
You know, I find amazing those memories, right? I remember I was driving like a Fiat Panda or something like that, the character was. And this is where technology, where we were, so 20 odd years ago, all those scenes were filmed up in Knotty Ash.
Right.
And we were on a low loader. So that car was on a trailer being towed through the streets with all the camera equipment a huge bit of kit,
Yeah.
like that would be done with a GoPro and a drone now.
Yeah.
Even if you were doing a huge movie, they'd be getting
Yeah.
a drone and a GoPro, but because the only way to do car work was in a low loader, like that. And it's amazing how that's just gone now, but there it was, sort of.
So you would have had more than one camera on in the windscreen as well, I imagine. There would have been more than one
Well, no,
camera.
so the car goes onto a trailer.
Yeah.
So you're not driving, you're being towed. And then on the back of the tow truck is the director and the camera operators and the first AD. And maybe you might have a car at the front to shoot head on into that, and maybe one on the side to go an angle shot or something like that. Well, I just find it amazing when you're talking about that.
So they go and meet Bill. If you said you were in your fear pan there. They go and meet Bill, and they actually enjoyed talking to Bill, even if he didn't get through all the questions about it that they were supposed to. And they give the presentation, but before the presentation, they'd gone back. They wanted to go back. They went back to the old people's home to see Bill again, but unfortunately, Bill had died. And when they give the presentation, it's awful. And Togger actually says, "Well, it's not my fault. My own work died." And I just love that line. It's not my fault that my own work had died. And then Mr. Green sort of really thought the lads hadn't done enough work and wanted to punish them and said, "You're gonna have to do give this to the deputy. You're gonna have to do this presentation for the deputy head." And Togger says, "Well, hold on, we did learn something from Bill. He told us to live life to the full. And the biggest difference between schools then and now was that they still worked hard, but they were able to have a laugh. It wasn't about league tables and exams and all things like that." And Mr. Green appeared to feel guilty about that. And maybe he's thinking, am I pushing these kids too hard? Am I getting them to do stuff that maybe I shouldn't? Maybe I'm expecting too much from them. And I just think it's really nice because he sort of had like a little bit of a crisis of conscience. And then we move on then, and this was sort of the Mr. Green storyline then, was to all the stuff with Taylor. Like I said, there had been things with teachers who hadn't been able to control the class. In the past, there'd been Mr. Knowles in the past, there'd been Mr. Scott in the past as well. But then it just seemed to go that little bit further with Mr. Green. Taylor had his mates who weren't in the school, and Mr. Green was trying to get Taylor to come into school and leave them. And Taylor was really mouthy with Mr. Green. And part of you think, is it because his mates are there, or is that just the way he is? But he does go into school, and later on, we see Taylor intentionally walk past Mr. Green and walk into him. But Mr. Green doesn't seem to notice or doesn't react in the way that maybe Taylor would have wanted to. And he says to Taylor, "Can you close the door?" And Taylor doesn't move. So Mr. Green closes the door himself. And it does come back to what you were saying earlier, that it was that kind of bullying storyline. Taylor was there thinking, this is my domain. This isn't yours. I'm in charge." And in the lesson, Mr. Green had asked Taylor to read a part in Macbeth, and Taylor just point blank refused. And you sort of think, would Mr. Green have really asked Taylor, knowing the reaction that he would have got? But again, it was to build this collision course as well. And Mr. Green then spoke to Taylor later on about Taylor's attitude. And as we said earlier on, it was obvious that Mr. Green wanted to teach. He had the kids' best interests at heart. He had Taylor's best interests at heart. But Taylor didn't really want to know, and he was really mouthy. And then Mr. Green basically called Taylor out as being a bully and saying that they were really society's runts. And you can see him losing his rag. And he starts getting more and more angry and more and louder with Taylor. And then Mr. Green says to him, "One way or another, you will toe the line." And we've never seen that side from Mr. Green before. And then Taylor then says, "Is that a threat?" And Mr. Green said it was a promise. And Taylor said to Mr. Greenwell, "I thought you were going to talk this through. You're just the same as all the others." And he says that he was going to tell Miss Bassinger about it. And Mr. Green follows him. He says, because he says to Mr. Green, "You're saying the kind of thing that a bully would say. And if you say anything to me like that again, I'm going to have you and I'm going to have your job." And you just think Mr. Green's on a hiding. So not, he's not going to win this, basically. And can I just ask then, so we talked about, you know, Reese being a, you know, how good Reese was in that role. What was it like getting to work with Reese as well and knowing what the storyline's going to be?
Well, I mean, Reese was clearly a talent. He was only 15 when we were doing it, you know, and he was young and he was great fun and he was cocky. He was really cocky and he was full of himself, you know, and all those things. And, you know, but, you know, I really liked him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was really pleased to see him sort of grow into the actor he is. And, but he'd already, you know, done films with Richard Harris and done a film with Ricky Tomlinson and stuff like that. So he was, you know, he was a talent in that respect. But you know, like with anything, you want to be able to put any character that you're playing. You want to find as many different layers and levels as possible. I mean, I've got no problem playing vulnerable, playing weak.
Yeah.
Just as much as I've got no problem playing a monster, you know. I think it's all these characters are fine. And if I'm, you know, if I'm playing the nicest character in the world, I start looking for his teeth. I start looking for his sharper edges. And and if I'm playing a horrible character, I start looking for its soft center and stuff. And
yeah,
and then it's my job to show as many different, you know. To keep it obviously entertaining and push it and see how far we can go with the character, but at the same time, hopefully keep it grounded enough that people can see themselves in it. So Reese was always very, very still and intense, and it was great to sort of play against. So you could play all these different shades and colors and sort of temperaments with him. And so, you know, it's like anything. It was a good scene, but that series had really good directors. I mean, some of those directors have gone on to, you know, win Emmys in America and huge, you know, like I think the last ever episodes were shot by the guy who's now doing the Umbrella Academy. And,
well, right.
And he also did The Last of Us, you know, the that thing, you know, Peter Hall, his name is actually, and he was like the young gun at Mersey TV at the time. But there were people like Paul Murphy was there, and Jill Robertson has gone on to do big, huge sort of event television and stuff like that. So it was good directors, and you know, and obviously Phil, Sir Phil, had a good old eye over the storylines and where it was going. So
the great thing there about Grange Hill was, you know, that storyline's going on. But then there's loads of other things going on. Because at that time, Kathy was worried that Martin was being bullied by Max Humphries as well. And she went to Mr. Green for advice.
That's right,
But he didn't really offer much advice. And obviously it's because he was going through the same sort of thing himself.
He couldn't say it,
And he was almost annoyed with her for asking for the advice, and because he reveals that, you know, he'd been bullied at school, so obviously what was going on with Taylor was, you know, he was having those sorts of flashbacks and stuff. And he says to Kathy, now this is really telling in the storyline, "We've all been in lessons where someone's proved disruptive and we thought if only they weren't here, wouldn't life be much simpler?" But he doesn't reveal if he thought that as a child or as a teacher. And I just think that's it for that storyline, that, you know, the Mr. Green and Taylor storyline, that's really sort of crucial, that line, because the next sort of thing with Mr. Green and Taylor was, Taylor never went to Mr. Green's lesson, and Mr. Green saw him and told him to go to classroom for detention later on.
See, I think at that point, Mr. Green is definitely thinking of Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, the audience can take what they want, but at the moment he was definitely thinking of it. But you know, like with all these people, the bullied character, he's going to pop and it could become quite dangerous. You know,
Yeah.
there's a volatility there.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
I was, when this series came out, where, people were stopping me in the street and they had such strong opinions.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
I think when it was out, I was rehearsing a play. I was in Cardiff rehearsing a play, and then we were about to open, and then it toured Wales and England, and then went to New York, and then came into London. So I was going to be doing it for a while,
Yeah.
but while I was sort of rehearsing going into the show opening, when I'd walk to the theatre every other night, somebody would stop me and say and have some opinion of,
Wow.
and they were involved. They were like, "What are you going to do? What are you going to
Yeah.
do?" They'd say. And then a lot of people were like, "Yeah, I think he deserved it. He
Yeah, I
deserved
mean, we
it."
found out what Mr. Green did, because obviously they ended up in the office together on their own, and Taylor was just carrying on being Taylor, and
Yeah.
Mr. Green's basically pleading with him, and he grabs hold of him. He says, "Look, just stop doing what you're doing." Taylor carried on, and in the end, Mr. Green hits him, punches him in the face. And as I said, we'd had things before with Mr. Knowles couldn't control a class, Mr. Scott couldn't. He nearly hit Trevor Cleaver, but he never did. He stopped. Then we had sort of the actual bullying teachers who were hitting kids, and then we had teachers who were hitting other teachers for bullying kids. This was the
Yeah.
first time where we'd seen, a teacher really be bullied by a kid, and a teacher react and do something about it. And the thing that happens afterwards is probably even worse than the actual act of the physical violence, because when Miss Basinger asks them both what's happened, Mr. Green says, "Oh yeah, Taylor attacked me," because she walked in and Taylor had Mr. Green up against the wall, and Mr. Green basically says, he attacked me, and Taylor gets expelled, excluded, with the fact of, we could get
Yeah.
permanently excluded. And that, as I say, that or that's pretty shocking of itself. And in the end, Miss Passenger found out, because when that happened and Mr. Green had hit Taylor, Nick, who was in sixth form, had been hiding in the office, and he'd seen it all, because he'd been trying
That's
to,
right.
in Sue Grangeill style, he'd been trying to steal exam papers, and he went to Miss Bassinger and told him. And the thing about that was, Nick and Taylor had never got on, so it wouldn't have been in his best interest to have made something like that up. And so in the end, Mr. Green was suspended with the investigation. And but Taylor had been spoken to by Karen, who again, wasn't, wouldn't have had Mr. Green down as a favourite. And she basically said to him, "Look, do you want him to lose his job? Is it fair that he loses his job on one mistake?" And Taylor then goes to Miss Passenger, said, "Look, nothing happened. Nobody hit anyone." And but Miss Passenger actually said, "We'll be in touch, and we'll let you know sort of what's happening with your job." But then we never saw Mr. Green again after that. Anyway, why was that?
Well, I think he was found out,
Yeah.
I think he was found out. I think he was definitely let go, and I always knew that he was going to be fired,
Right. So
you
you
know.
said earlier on you knew it was only going to be for one series. So
Yeah.
it was their decision. It wasn't yours.
No, absolutely. I knew the storyline, and I think I like the idea of going in and knowing the ending. You know,
Yeah, right. I get you.
I
Yeah.
love the idea that, oh, I can go and do this, and I know that it's not going to drag out into whatever else.
Yeah.
I know, there's a full stop to it. So, I always knew he was going to explode and lose his job.
Right.
So,
Okay.
I don't think you ever want him kind of crawling back.
No.
In another series or something like
Yeah.
that. So no, I always knew it was gonna, but the director of that episode where he is sort of, you realize that Mr. Green can't hold the lion anymore.
Yeah.
they shot it all on one take, and it was just
Nice.
this one take of the camera and just sort of panning slowly across all just one move. And the director of that episode, I bumped into him on different jobs at different places over the years, and he's always gone, "I was so proud of that."
Yeah,
He
brilliant.
said, "I had such a hard time off the producers because they were saying, 'Why didn't you shoot another angle? Why didn't you do another option?' And he was like, 'No, I wanted to commit to this style, everything playing. Mr. Green doesn't say anything. He's been re read the riot act, and you just read on his face that, that's the end of the road for him." So I love that. I love the fact of, and the film nerd in me was like, "Yeah, this is proper Paul Thomas Anderson." And the dad, and he was, and we were vibing, but I love the fact years later, this director was like, "I'm so glad we did that." He said, I got so much crap off the producers for like not doing more coverage. And it was quite sweet. And I remember the when we wrapped on the whole series, it was the last ever episode of Brookside, and there was a big like a celebratory party at Mersey TV. And I shook hands with Phil Redmond, and he said, "Thanks for everything you've done on Grange Hill and stuff like that. It's great." But
Brilliant.
I always had great respect for, in my career, I've worked with people like Phil and Linda LaPlante and people like that who have this amazing common touch. They're able to tell a detailed story really, really broadly, and it's hugely accessible and digestible,
Brilliant.
and it connects with many different people, and you learn a lot from people like that,
I mean, so we will talk then about a few things you've done since Grange Hill, things you moved on to, because I've got down that you were in the Lassie remake in 2005. And when I looked, I'll be honest, I've never seen that movie. That cast is absolutely ridiculous. The people who were in that film, I was like, Peter O'Toole and Steve Pemberton, Nicholas Lyndhurst, Edward Fox, Gregor Fisher, Rob. I mean, that must have been something as well, because that's still really early on in your sort of film career as well. Like, I mean, that the cast is phenomenal.
Well, that was it was a great moment. Well, it was written and directed by Charles Sturridge, who did Shackleton. So he brought me into that, and that was a great thing, and we got on great there, and all the bits. And because the whole story is Lassie trying to get home, and Lassie bumps into people on the way home, and some people help and hinder, and so at the part of the story was. A young Peter Dinklage, just before Game of Thrones fame, Lassie was living with Peter's character. And then Nicholas Lyndhurst and I turn up as some wrong'uns and try to rob them. And but I had a great time. I was there. Peter Dinklage was such a great actor, such a cool guy. And obviously Nicholas Lyndhurst, icon, and lovely fella. No, wait, I really had a really good time. But yeah, the cast was ridiculous. But I've throughout my career, I've found myself on in amongst these cast lists where I am the only one I've never heard of. You know what I mean? In the cast list. So,
Oh, brilliant.
I mean, it's but that's a line I think I've probably, and I will continue to use, because I won an award and a few years ago, and I was up against Anthony Hopkins, Michael Sheen, Matthew Rhys, and myself, and I won, and I didn't think I was going to win, but I won it, and I used that line there. I said, "In this category, I'm the only one." So yeah.
Brilliant. There's a few things like you did, like you've done Torchwood and the Doctor Who video game as well. Does that like that must then open up a whole new world being a Doctor Who? I mean, does that lead to things like conventions and and things like that, or
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could do. I mean, I
right.
just don't, you know, I just cr carry on doing my thing,
Yeah.
really. It was just a job I did. It was, I was going to go into it as a semi-regular, and then that part was cut out the series, and I think they felt bad because of that, and so they gave me a guest episode in the first season, and at that point it was Torchwood, so they didn't really know how big it was going to be. You know, it was this spin-off Doctor Who show, which went on to be sort of, you know, kind of iconic. So to me, it was just another job. You know, it was like I did an episode, I had a good time, and I liked the director and I liked the actors I was with. And I think I just got married. I think I was on my honeymoon, and I got a fax to the hotel saying, go straight to Cardiff to shoot Doctor Who spin-off. So, you know, they were, it was, but it is a show that people love, and it keeps coming back. You know, like Grain Chill, it has a
Yes.
fan base, it has a long tail.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay. So, I mean, you've mentioned a few things earlier on as well. You did mention Shameless earlier on.
Yes.
Can I ask, was that as bonkers to film as I imagine it would have been to film?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think much of it at the time. I didn't. It was a job. It was another, you know, a job, and I just had a. I'd been abroad doing this cop show in Paris for years, for a big chunk of the year. But I loved Shameless. I thought it was great, and it was the last ever episode ever. It like
Right.
before. Well, it was the penultimate episode. It was the last ever storyline,
Right, I
you
get
know,
you.
like episodic storyline,
Yeah.
because the last ever episode was just the family in the house, and that's how they ended it. So I felt like a real honor to go and do it, and sort of great to be in it before they before it was finished. And I thought the actors were great, and I loved the character. It was myself and Rona Gallagher, who I loved from The Commitments, because I loved that
Yeah,
movie when I was
yeah.
young. So I was like, yeah, I'll go and do the last ever episode of Shameless with
Yeah.
the girl from The Commitments, and it was a funny episode. I think I was a hostage negotiator who was trying to talk them out. So it was great. But to answer your question, they used to film that series on the estate in Manchester, but it
Right.
became too hard to navigate because the show got bigger and it took up more space, and all of a sudden, how do you keep that continuity for that long? So then they ended up building a huge part of that
Wow.
estate on a studio so they could control it.
Yeah.
Now that was a really nice job. That was
Brilliant.
really cool to do. And I haven't done much TV for a long time, but I do love it. I think the last TV I did was Manhunt,
Right.
the
Now,
the
can I just talk about Manhunt? Because obviously,
yeah yeah
you in Manhunt, you play Levi Belfield. Now,
yeah
is it challenging having to take on a role like that?
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, do you have to do much research for it?
Yes,
Right. Oh,
yes. You
and
have to do the right work, you know? You
right,
have to do
yeah.
the right work and take it very seriously, because he's a very serious character in a very serious crime, and people's lives have been affected forever because of the actions of
And
that
so with that in
person.
mind then, is the atmosphere on set different when you're filming something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I took the role very seriously, and dealt with it quite silently, if you know what I mean,
Yeah.
because you don't want to sensationalize, and you don't want to, you know, project something that isn't there onto it. At the same time, you don't want to, you know, you just want to. And really, the show is about Colin Sutton, Martin Clunes's character,
Yeah.
you know. So I think that's the right. It was the right way to do it. It was the right way to do it was to have, you know, the cops
Yeah.
hunting the man,
Yeah.
and so you observe him. And the wrong way would have been to have it through his POV and
Yeah.
his, you know, his point of view. That would
Because
have been
I do think it's really, of course, it, what was it, 4 episodes, but obviously your character was only in it for like the last two. So, you know, it was, it's cleverly done the way, because they don't know who it is, you know, do they? And then you.
absolutely. Well, I mean, it was one of the most successful things I did, and I think I worked on it for 6 months. I working on the accent and the physical shape
Right.
of and the weightlifting and building up there and the
Yeah.
tattoos and the haircut and that's the one I won the BAFTA for. That is the one I won the
Right.
award for. So but I think I only filmed about 5 or 6 days,
Right. Okay.
but it took a good few months. You know, it took a huge amount of time
Yeah.
to, you
Yeah.
know, to
Yeah.
do it. But you know, but you know, they were a great team. The director was fantastic, and Martin is just such a great guy, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So whenever I'm putting an episode of the podcast out,
Yeah.
I put picture clues to who the guest is going to be on social media. And the first person that guesses who it's going to be gets to ask a question to the next guest. And the last guest I had on the podcast was Amanda Mealing. And the first person that got it was someone called Sammy Hagg. Now, Sammy always enters the competition, and he's had a few things where he sent questions in, and I may have forgotten to ask them to the guest, or the guest that we thought we were getting on, we haven't been able to get on. So, but Sammy has got a question for you. Now, he said, what was it like working with, first of all, Elijah Wood in Set Fire to the Stars, and also Tom Holland in The Current War? Because obviously, you know, they're massive Hollywood stars, aren't they? So what's it like when you know, you're working with someone of that caliber, shall we
Yeah,
say, or if you
I take it Sammy likes the comics and
that's what it seems
the
like.
facts
Yeah,
and stuff.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Elijah Wood is a fantastic guy, and he played John Brynan in a film called Set Fire to the Stars, which I played Dylan Thomas, which I wrote as well, and was the first production of our production company, Manners Birds Films. And I was a film that really changed the game for me as an actor.
Right.
And so working with Elijah, he's really down to earth. He's a filmmaker in his own right. And actually, we've just produced a horror film together, which is coming out this year. So we're still in touch.
Right.
So yes, so Sammy, Elijah, working with Elijah is, you know, it's daunting when you don't meet him, and all that goes away when you do, because he's a really decent guy and actually a really brilliant actor, you know. And if you watch that movie, it really is 80% he and I, you know. So we got to know each other really well and work really well together, and he was able to play, I guess, the quieter of the two-hander. I got to play all the cymbals and the hi-hat and the trumpets, and he had to play the bass. But he's a really great guy. Now, Tom Holland, I didn't work with on the film because
Right,
we
okay.
didn't have any scenes with him, but by all accounts he's a great guy. But my stuff was with Michael Shannon,
Right. Cool.
and he who was as intense as you'd expect him to
Right,
be,
okay.
really. But
Okay.
that film didn't really turn out the way they hoped it would.
Oh, I get you.
You know,
Right.
it's a bit long and overblown,
Yeah,
really. But
right.
that's
Okay.
okay. That's okay. It happens.
So now you've just mentioned there about, you know, we mentioned the Set Fire to the Stars, and you played Dylan Thomas, obviously, you know,
Yeah.
really, really important character in history. You also played Winston Churchill,
That's right.
in Born a King. When you get a role like, oh, I mean, get a role like that, you wrote Set Fire to the Stars, so you wrote that for yourself, obviously. But do you put research into that? Do you have to do a lot of thinking,
Yeah, I mean, I'd
am
always
I
with
going to get
Dylan
this
Thomas.
character right?
Yeah,
Basically.
I mean, Dylan Thomas, I've been a fan forever. So that was like, you know, he was my, you know, he was my sort of Hamlet, really. You know,
Right.
I wanted to play that character. With Winston Churchill, it's I like characters. I like the big characters. I like the big egos, and like my own ego, I couldn't say no to it. But it was with a Spanish director called Agustí Villarongo, who is no sadly no longer with us. And he said to me when we first met, because they just offered me the part. He saw Dylan Thomas and said, "Get that actor to play Winston Churchill. He's the one."
Wow.
And I walked into the room, my dark curly hair and a big beard, and he looked at me and he said, and he said it in Spanish. He's a translator to translate it. And he said, "You look nothing like Winston Churchill, but I know he's in there."
Wow.
And that day I went shaved. They dyed my hair peroxide blonde. They wet shaved
Yeah.
a receding hairline back there, and then I came in later on the next day with the suit, and there he was, really. But
Wow.
I mean, the hardest thing with Winston is, and I don't even know if I it was at the time everybody was bloody playing Winston Churchill, like Gary Oldman was doing it. Brian Cox was doing it, like John Lithgow was doing it. I was like the one of the Winstons at that year. It was the voice, it was the iconic voice. You get the cigar
Yeah.
and you get the voice and you just think, oh gosh, at some point I've got to do it. I've got to do it. I've got to look another actor in the eye and do the voice.
Yeah.
And so that was nerve-wracking, but you do as much research, but sometimes it can you've got to do the research that helps you
Definitely.
because you can read a ton of books and it might just fill your head full of contradictory things, or you
Yeah.
can observe it. It all depends on where that character is at the time. So you might read other stuff
Yeah.
that would help play the character that maybe I might read or watch things that the character would have read or watched.
Right, I get you.
So
Yeah.
like with Dylan Thomas, I knew all the poems and I knew all the history, but I read like comics and musicals and things that he liked to read
Right,
and
I
pulp
get you. Yeah.
fiction and stuff like that, so that helped me. So yeah, it was but with Winston Churchill, my ego couldn't say no to it.
Brilliant. Okay. So we've talked about stuff that you've written as well, and the Almond and the Seahorse.
I'm not so easy that the writing of stuff is like there's one thing writing yourself a great part,
Yeah.
but you then have to convince people that
Well,
you can do it.
I mean that my other thing there on the writing is, when you're writing, a screenplay or whatever, do you have actors in mind of who you want to play? So, but like Rebel Wilson, was Rebel Wilson, was that who, was she always number one there, like for that one?
Well, no, she wasn't, just because I'd lived with the play when it was originally a play,
Ah, right, okay.
and then we wrote the script, so it took so a while to come together. But now you can't imagine Rebel not being in
No,
that
I mean,
role.
I love Rebel Wilson. Anyway, I think she's tremendous in everything that, like.
Oh, she's fantastic! I wait till you see this movie. It comes out in cinemas in March.
Right.
And we've got a new cut of the film that's coming out for the UK release, which is great. And she's great. She's a really, really decent human being. But
Brilliant.
when I wrote Keepers or The Vanishing, it came out as The Vanishing.
Yeah.
My co-writer and I, Joe, we wrote the script together. We both said, so we set fire to the stars. Andy Goddard, who directed the film, and we wrote the script, said, "Wouldn't Elijah Wood be great in this?" And we went out and we got Elijah Wood, and that was amazing. And then when Joe and I wrote Keepers or The Vanishing as it came out, we weren't going to be in the film,
Right.
but we wrote down some names and said, "Wouldn't it be great, these lighthouse keepers, if we had like an older one, a middle-aged one, a sort of an older one who was kind of very smart and a middle one that was very strong, and then a young one who was really mouthy. And just at the early stages before we started writing the film, and we were like, yeah, it'd be like Peter Mullen, Gerard Butler, and some unknown. And the film got made, and we had Peter Mullen, Gerard Butler, and Connor Swindells,
Wow.
who's since become really famous. We gave him his first role, which is
Wow.
great, and he was brilliant in it. But so they were definitely in our heads when we wrote that. And with 6 Minutes to Midnight, I wrote it with Eddie Izzard. So Eddie was, and Judi Dench had already said she wanted to be in it. So we were already writing for Eddie and Judy, and stuff like that. I mean, what a bloody luxury to say, like, oh, yeah, whatever, right, for
Oh, brilliant.
Jude's. But sometimes you are, and then but other times you write a script, and for whatever reason the cast, you can't get the cast that's been in your head, and it changes for whatever reason. But then the film gets made, and you can't imagine anyone else in it. So I always say there are more brilliant actors than there are parts. So, don't get too attached, because you miss out on somebody you haven't thought of.
So, are you working on anything at the minute that you're allowed to tell us about?
Oh yeah, I've got loads. So I've got three, as an actor, I've got three films coming out next year. So first half of next year. So we have Alman and the Seahorse with Rebel Wilson, and that's my directorial debut,
Wow.
and I wrote that and stuff like that. So that's coming out. At the same time, there's a beautiful comedy coming out about competitive vegetable growers called Swede Caroline.
It's
And it's Joe Hartley as Caroline, and then myself and Richard Lumsden and Aisling Bea is in that, and Faye Ripley is in that, and Ray Fear, and Alice Lowe too. So that's a really lovely fun, and that's going to be in cinemas actually the same time as Almond. So they're both, you can see me as a guy suffering a brain trauma or a guy wrangling a giant marrow
All
in a
right,
cinema.
okay.
And then there's a film that where I play a very monstrous character in a musical called Chuck Chuck Baby, and that comes out, I think, May or something like that. And that is the, every form of toxic masculinity rolled into one.
Brilliant.
And then films that I'm going to direct another film that hopefully that will go soon. I've written a TV series. And then my company has got a bunch of films that are all hopefully sort of, that are all different stages of casting and preparation. So everything from a rom-com to an action film to, you never know which one's going to go first, but they're all looking good. And then of course, Grange Hill the movie.
That's I just
That's
this is
save the
the
best till last.
this is the part of the interview where I always say we are coming to the end, and I've got a few more questions about Grange Hill for you. And at this point, the question I always ask, in the last 2 years, it's been revealed that there's going to be a Grange Hill movie.
Right.
Phil Redmond's on board, Sarah Sugarman's on board. What do you think of the idea of a Grange Hill movie, Kellen?
Well, it's partly my idea, really. It's my, so we I was it was Phil approached myself and Sean Marley, who's my business partner, and we were chatting about it, and he's and Phil really wanted to explore Grange Hill again, but in a medium that he hadn't explored before. And he'd seen a couple of our films, especially The Vanishing, the thriller we made, and he was sort of taken by that and said, well, what do you think of doing Grange Hill the movie? And I thought, well, was a really exciting idea, you know,
Yeah.
because it is missing on the cultural landscape. I think there is that hole where, you know, kids, young people's television and film goes from, you know, young to adult very quickly and nothing in between at that transition time. So I think it's needed. I think Phil's got a great voice. He's got his finger on the pulse. I'm talking to him tomorrow. The script is really good. We're just sort of at it, and it's sort of trying to get that balance of, what is needed, because I think, like I said, Grangeville is a brand. It's HP Sauce, you know. It's Best of British. It's with us, you know. It's World's Strongest Man over Christmas. You know, it's things like it's Quality Street. It's all those different things. You know, I feel like that speech in Love Actually, where he goes, you know, it's David Beckham's left foot. It's David Beckham's right. You know what I mean? But I do think it's really important. But also, it's needed. And the young people now, we've got an opportunity to break some really new young talent sort of in this film without ignoring the talent of the past either. So, we're really, really excited by it. You know, when we've identified, I can't tell you it, but we
That's
did,
great,
where we're going to shoot. And we want it to be cinematic and vital and current and feel like those great Shane Meadows movies of the past, you know, but yet have that Grange Hill humor and relevance and poignancy and fun, you know, fun. Yes.
I've had people saying, oh, it'll be this, it'll be that, it won't be the same and all that. But I just think, I've said this before, if Phil Redmond's involved, he's not going to let it be rubbish anyway, is he? Do you know what I mean? He's not going to let it. People say, oh, it'll be woke, it'll be this, it'll be that. But Phil Redmond won't let it be like that, will he?
No,
He
no,
won't.
no.
He just won't.
Yeah, 100%. You know, he loves Grange Hill, and he really loves it, and he really respects it, and he really values it, and he knows how important it is to people and how important it is to him, and he ain't gonna drop the ball on this one at all. And we are talking to some very exciting people who are interested in this,
Brilliant.
so.
Because
So,
we keep,
because we want it to be a film, we want it
yeah,
to
I mean,
be.
we keep hearing, it's getting shelved, it's been dropped and all that, but the fact that you're on here now and you can tell us that it's not without telling us, because I appreciate you can't tell us anything about the film itself, like, but
And if people are going, how does he know? Well, you go, well, I'm one of the producers of the film, so I know, I'm talking to Phil in about 12 hours.
And is there any chance of Mr. Green being in the movie?
No.
No chance at all. No
No.
way. Probably just
No.
as well, to be honest.
He's he's punched his last
Yeah, we
child.
can't have him
He's
punching his way through the movie, like so.
you know, and I really appreciate it, and I don't mean this to be some over humble, but you know, it was Grange Hill is just a great thing to have been part of. Really, I don't think many people are walking around with Mr. Green badges and figures and T-shirts and stuff like that. But what I love about it is that it's part of my kind of cultural landscape, but also it's a part of my career, and it's one of those things where you go, yeah, I did that. And it was really informative, and it was a great experience, and I've carried it around with me, and I'm really, it's like a tour of duty. It's like, yeah, I did series whatever of Grange Hill, so I don't you won't find me in any convention talking about, this is, I don't think It's the most I've ever thought about Mr. Green in 20 odd years.
Yeah.
But I think about Grange Hill a lot. And
Right.
it was great to play a character like that and to do that storyline, which was classic Grange Hill, which is at that time, the temperature was changing in schools
Yeah.
and people were becoming very frightened of teenagers.
Yeah.
And the news and the headlines were very much about, the kids taking over the,
Yeah.
taking over the keys of the asylum, shall we
Yeah.
say, or whatever,
Yeah.
and starting to run it. So the news was full of bullied teachers or attacked teachers or scared teachers and stuff like that. And how what classic Grange Hill, they tackled that storyline head on.
And really well
And
done as well, really well
really
done.
well, and put a character like that in there and explored the nuances, how easy it is to for something like that to happen.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, other than Mr. Green, who is your favorite character in Grange? You might have mentioned this earlier on, but who was your favorite character ever in Grange Hill?
My favorite character was Ziggy.
Right.
Hands down.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah, I like Ziggy because he was funny and he was cheeky and yeah, it was
Yeah.
Ziggy and it was Gonge, and I guess, looking back, I'd probably have to say Zamo,
Right.
but as a kid, Zamo was terrifying because he was on the floor
Yeah.
with bags under his eyes, trying to licking the drugs off the
Yeah.
floor, and that was frightening. But
Yeah.
as an adult looking back, you think, what a character,
Yeah.
what a storyline.
Yeah.
But yes, but I think my favorite character was definitely was
Right.
Ziggy,
And
and
if you could, if you couldn't have played if you, Mr. Green, was there another character that you would have liked to have played? Can be from your time, it could be from earlier, it doesn't have to be.
Well, do you know what? Do you know what? I probably have just skipped over my answer because if I could, hands down, it's got to be Mr. Bronze.
I, do you know what? I knew you were going to say that. I just knew that you had Mr. Bronson there.
Mr. Bronson was the best character ever,
Yeah.
and what an actor. The guy went on to do Indiana Jones
Yeah.
and Star Wars, but yeah, Mr. Bronson was just. But I also coach rugby on a Sunday,
Right.
so I've got a lot of even though he's a little ahead of my time, was the PE teacher. What was his name?
Mr.
Yeah,
Baxter.
that scene where he's teaching them rugby and he runs
Yeah.
elbowing them. I just think that's hilarious. So.
Yeah.
So maybe, I love those characters.
And you just said there about Mr. Bronson, and you were talking about, watching Grange Hill as a child and then as an adult. That's exactly the same with Bronson. You watch him as a kid and you can't stand him, but then you watch him as an adult and you just think, my God, he's brilliant.
He's
He's
brilliant.
such a
Yeah.
good character. Brilliant. Okay. So, Kellen, sort
The
of fan,
wig, the sash,
the
the
wig,
whole
the
lot.
bow tie,
Fantastic.
everything. Yeah. So, my
Yeah.
final question for you, Kellen, right, is why do
Yeah.
you think there is still such affection for Grange Hill?
Well, because it was part of our childhood, it was passed on to us. It helped us go from primary school to secondary school. It helped us understand the landscape and understand each other better. And it was around for a long time. And so it's a habit, it's necessary, it's wallpaper, it's caravan holidays, it's we don't really want to do without it.
Yeah.
And I think there's such affection because it hit us at a time when we really needed it. And I think there's great affection for it right now because I think deep down, we really need it and we really want it back. And yes, I think we're going to make this movie and it's going to be great. But I also think, wouldn't it be wonderful if Grange Hill came back as a series as well? Because nothing has bettered it or replaced it, and there's a desire for it. So I think that's why. It's been with us for a long time, and we need it.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, Kellen, thank you so much for coming on. As you said earlier,
Pleasure.
we've been trying to get this one sorted for a long time, and even tonight we thought we didn't think
I know, I
it
know. I'm so sorry,
was
but
going to happen
thank you for your patience and thank you for your diligence and your
as well.
kindness, your grace and your support. And I'm a big fan of the podcast and everything you do. And Sausage on a Fork, what an amazing, amazing title. We all know what that is.
Yeah,
So
well, honestly, thank you so much, coming on, telling us your experiences, not just on Grange Hill, but obviously the industry as a whole as well. It's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. Yeah,
pleasure.
I can't thank you enough. Anyone that's listening, happy Christmas, happy New Year, and I'll speak to you next time.
Happy
Cheers.
Christmas. Thanks very, very much indeed. Have a
Thank
great
you.
time.
Thanks. Bye bye.